Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's our tech radio hour this Friday, and we've got a great lineup for you today. Jeff Litterick is a network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology in Peer. Jeff, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be back.
Kent Osborne is with us. He's director of digital for SDPB and SD.net and the usual host of this show in non-pandemic days. Kent, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Heather Benson also joins us. She is SDPB social media expert. Hey, Heather.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
All right, let's start. I want to talk about leadership in the tech industry because Kent sent me some information about Elon Musk with Tesla and some of the things that he has said. You know, obviously, we always follow what Mark Zuckerberg says about the pandemic and about, you know, Facebook's role in information right now. So let's start at the top and see how some of these big tech companies and big data companies are speaking out about what's happening and what they think should happen in the political world. Kent, let's start with you and just tell us a little bit about what Elon said, because it kind of makes a stir.
Well, the Bay Area has been in a shelter-in-place order for a while. And during a recent quarterly earnings call with his analysts and with investors, he called the situation really an outrage he said they were forcibly imprisoning people in their homes against all their constitutional rights. So, you know, earlier on Twitter, he said the United States needed to be set free, free being the operative word. So, you know, it's a little bit hearkening to, you know, some of the presidential tweets. So if you want to tie that in politically, I guess you can. But, you know, he's got a bunch of really big companies to run, and all of his employees are at home.
Right.
And whether or not they can all function, you know, making batteries or doing whatever they need to be. They're not doing that in the Bay Area, of course. But, you know, he's got a large workforce to maintain. But it also makes me wonder, is he really thinking about the health of his employees when he says that too? So, you know, it's some controversial. It got him in the news, and it's never hurts to be in the news cycle, as most people know. But it's just an interesting take.
Right. His shares in Tesla didn't do so well. But let's talk a little bit about this idea of, you know, kind of getting in the news. And Heather, I'm curious about what your thoughts are, because this is a Zuckerberg problem and challenge and opportunity. It's an Elon Musk problem and challenge and opportunity, and certainly others as well. What are they just always kind of out there on social media and out there saying things that stir people up, Heather?
Well, I think Elon Musk is an outlier in that it is very rare he's not part of the news cycle, for better or worse. Zuckerberg, as a lot of people probably know, tends to take a much more measured approach. When they want to be in the news, they definitely are. But he's known for just sitting quietly for months at a time when they need to let something blow over, or they just don't, you know, want to really ruffle any feathers. One of the difficulties with anyone who works with Facebook a lot or in Facebook is that you don't always hear a lot from them. And then there's, of course, Jack Dorsey's Twitter. He's in and out. I mean, Twitter's had a lot of ups and downs over the last few years. And they were one of the leaders at the very beginning of this in doing what they could to protect their employees, as well as getting out in front of protecting from misinformation regarding COVID. And I think for Twitter and Facebook, their biggest focus is this not turning into another 2016 election cycle where they come out of this looking really bad. And that's been the focus of a lot of their messaging, is here's what we're doing to protect you from bad information, because they've already been through their bad news cycle for about the last 4 years.
They hope that they've been through their bad news cycle, but there might be more. There might be more to come. And, you know, go ahead, Ken.
Lori? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so here's the really crazy thing. If we remember back just a few months, you know, to the beginning of the year, even social media companies were starting to push back and say, okay, everybody, it's time to take a little break. Let's see what we can do to, you know, they started disabling some of the like buttons. And do you remember that? They were trying to get us to use social media a little bit less and push away a little bit. And then the pandemic. And all of a sudden, as Heather can tell you, usage of social media when everybody's locked inside is gone bonkers. And so that whole thing about pushing back a little bit and taking a little bit of a break completely went out the window.
Right. Just like ordering things online just went through the roof too. And we've seen some of the problems Amazon and trying to sort of fulfill that. Jeff Litterick, tell me a little bit about how you look at this. Do you follow these people? Do you care? Can we tell anything from some of the rhetoric we hear, whether it's political or just their frustrations? Does it matter on the ground level?
In some cases, yes. Some cases, no. Elon talks to talk sometimes, and he is kind of sensational. and that's just his personality and stuff. So you kind of expect that from him. But, you know, he's also doing good stuff. I mean, he may be hurting, but he's converted some of his factories over to producing medical PPE equipment, ventilators, stuff like that at one point. And to be honest, he posted almost record profits this last quarter, so he's probably not hurting as much as others. But yeah, I mean, the longer this goes on, the more people are going to get frustrated just in general and stuff. And you're kind of starting to see that with all the back and forth on social media and stuff too. So I think it's just the nature of the beast in this case, that everyone's at home. And everyone's starting to get pent up after a few months. So I've been using social media more just because it seems to be the best way to get some news and context and you know, listen to the briefings from the governor and or president and Congress and stuff like that. I know Facebook even added new emotes just for this crisis. So, and I hadn't used Facebook for a very long time before this, and I've been using it now quite a bit. Just to, you know, find stuff in stock also too. It's been kind of a madhouse on the internet, the last couple of months, but it seems to be somewhat stabilizing, I hope.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit, because it's a huge challenge and an opportunity. And Heather, I think Jeff has a good point where people sort of expect Elon to be Elon because he is a certain kind of personality. But there is also this backlash I've been seeing on social media against influencers and wealthy people who try to do something that they think is encouraging and helpful. And then a lot of people might say, well, you're sitting there in your mansion by yourself. Thanks a lot. Or other people who are doing things that really resonate and people celebrate. Let's talk about developing content right now. And let's start with this, Heather. A lot more people, there are a lot of eyeballs that just turned to social media, right?
There are. I mean, the numbers for the last 2 months are unbelievable. I think I can pull, we're at, I think, like a 25% increase from January to March. And how many people are on Facebook, on Twitter, on TikTok. Facebook alone, year over year, is up 10%, 2.6 billion users last month worldwide, as everyone hops on because we don't have anything to do. And really, social media is becoming that social connection for people, be it, you know, connecting with your community. I know I've connected with my neighbors in different ways than I did a year ago or 4 months ago. Because this is where we go. I mean, we have churches going Facebook Live. We have community events. We have things like the social distance powwow movement, where we have all these people who never, you know, went out and put out content. And I'm talking about individuals here in ways that are totally different than we would have even dreamed of doing 3 months ago. And I think it's showing some of the real things that social media is meant for. We've talked about during that 2016 mess, you know, Zuckerberg had this idealistic view of Facebook being a way that people could connect and build community online. And he got, you know, laughed at a little because it got really ugly. But we've seen some of those good things happen. And we've seen the ugly side, too. I mean, the infighting remains the same because, unfortunately, humans remain human. But I think we've seen some of the ways that when we can't connect physically, this is something that gives us an opportunity that we wouldn't have had 20 years ago. And I know in my family, it's been valuable. We've connected as a family. My daughter's been able to use Messenger Kids to talk to some of her other second grade friends that we absolutely wouldn't have, you know, they physically wouldn't have seen each other for the last 2 months. And that's hard. We're a social species, and social media is giving us an outlet that we, you know, they didn't have in the 1918 pandemic. It's a whole different right. ball game. Some in bad ways, but there's a lot of good things coming of it too.
Right. Let's talk about what some of those responsibilities or opportunities are for people who are creating content to think about, you know, what can backfire right now. You've got people, you know, some people just doing what they always do, and then others kind of wading into sharing stuff that they haven't before. And Kent, I want to start with you. What are some of the ground rules here for, I don't want to be opportunistic, but to take advantage of and to do good work, whether that good work is, you know, earning customer loyalty, or that good work is helping people or getting out, you know, good, solid information to people. What are some of the ground rules for good content production, Kent?
Well, I don't know about the ground rules, but certainly thinking outside of the box has got to, if you already haven't started getting a little bit uncomfortable with your boundaries, then you haven't been doing this right, or you're not doing your research. And that goes from, you know, simply reaching out and contacting other people, making that human connection, even though it's electronically. You know, I don't know if a lot of people knew what Zoom was a few months ago. Sure. But there's a lot of folks that do now, because they've been asked to be a part of that, whether it's a coffee group with your church, whether it's a online educational thing, whether it was Easter Sunday with your family. You know, boundaries got pushed a little bit, I think, when it comes to that. And it's just a way to try to reach out in ways that, that you're not used to, that you're not comfortable with, or you haven't been comfortable with in the past, didn't realize maybe it was there, or didn't think it was worth pursuing. So it's time to take the risk, because in a lot of ways, it's worth it. That human connection and reaching out and being a part of folks' lives and listening. And helping tell the story is one direct way that's really, I think, an answer to your question.
Yeah. What are some of the strangest things that you've had to do via Zoom or via technology that you've known? My sister got married, and I went to her wedding while sitting on my couch, and then we filmed ourselves dancing for the wedding dance and sent it to her. Because obviously there was no wedding dance. So that was, you know, I will always remember the pandemic and the wedding and just sort of processing that. Kent, what's one of the oddest things that you've had to
do? Well, it sounds silly, but coming up here in a few days, the Zeal Center in Sioux Falls is hosting a virtual conference on how to host a virtual conference. So they're starting to teach people how to do this, how to be confident and get out and really stretch your wings and communicate with a ever broadening, I guess, sense of or sort of people. Because like I said, I don't think and I've been to a few virtual you know, whether it's a drinks for no reasons kind of event, or having lunch with people, or a coffee hour at church, there's a demographic there that I never thought I would see on a video camera, on a laptop, or off of a phone. It's become so easy, and the other part is you've got to be willing to try it. And I think there's a willingness now with a group of people. They're lonely. They're home. They've been home. And you know, the older folks have really taken this seriously, and they've stayed home, and they crave the folks that I call and talk to. crave that. They want to know what the latest word is. What's the news? What's going on locally? What's the latest at the club or anything, because they've just been completely so cut off. And as we all know, getting your news just off of TV or whatever is not really a really wholesome thing to do. You've got to have that connection and that touch.
And I'd like to add, this is probably not too weird, but it's been one of the better experiences being stuck at home and stuff is the group where I work with, we're pretty tight-knit, but there's about 12, 15 of us. But what we decided is after hours every week, we set aside an hour. Sometimes it goes on longer. Where we just get together in one big call just to talk, not about work, but just to catch up like you normally would with your coworkers during the middle of the day. And just chit chat and discuss what's going on in everybody's lives and what's happening and stuff. And that interaction really brings keeps that workforce, at least our group, very close together during the rest of the week. So that's kind of weird. You don't normally think, well, I'm just after hours, I'm going to get on a video call with all my coworkers just to chat, right? But it really does help quite a bit. So that's been one of the weird things, but it gets you kind of out of your day and reconnects you with your normal people that you normally interact with every day.
Yeah. Heather, how about you? Some of the strange things that you've kind of had to go through.
Well, since your meetings can be anywhere you are, and I, your ears are always on if your hands are busy. We own a small farm, and I think, Lori, you already know this story, but I have on several different missions on the farm had my phone in a conference with my SDPB teammates, including delivering a lamb while we were having a conference call. And it's one of those where you find out that you can answer a question to a group of people while at the same time being a midwife to a sheep. So it's interesting how flexible a person becomes. And I think we've all done that with kids or with cooking or the ability to multitask changes when you're multitasking from your home environment versus the office environment.
Yeah. This is one of the things that I love about this.
A little bit careful.
Go ahead.
Because if you're a newbie, do remember on Zoom, even if you're not shown on the screen, people can still see you if you have your video turned on. They can actually go and look at you. That happened to one unfortunate person who decided to take a bathroom break during the middle of a Zoom meeting. even though they weren't speaking, so they weren't on the main screen, in Zoom, if your video is on at any time, anyone can see you. So just be aware of those kind of changes, right? Be aware that anyone can hear you and see you at any time on these meetings. So
that's good advice going forward. That's the thing that you will always remember. And I was going to say, some of the things that I enjoy about this time are those sort of weird stories and those mistakes and those, I haven't had my hair cut in, how long, and this is how I really look. And it's made me feel like we're all a little bit more human and we're a little more humble. And, my house is a constant, pile of books here and there, and finding a place to have a video conference where there isn't some kind of clutter behind me is always a challenge. And then finally I was like, well, whatever, you're all just going to see how I really live. But Zoom, we've talked about Zoom a little bit. Let's talk about some of the competition for Zoom, because this is not the only video conferencing app in town. And now we're starting to see signs that other people want to move into that market. Kent, what are some of the things that you're seeing and how might this change in the days ahead?
Well, on the business side, just when this whole pandemic was starting to take hold, Microsoft was really pushing the next version of Skype. And that's called Microsoft Teams. And many state employees know that now, because many of our meetings got pushed to Teams, which is in the suite of tools with Outlook. And if you're not familiar with it, with Outlook and Excel and, PowerPoint and programs like that. So Teams became an integral part and connects with the Microsoft Office suite of tools. So many people do that. The state legislature this year, when they came back for veto session, used Teams to connect all 105 legislators at one time when they met jointly, and then separately, of course, in their 70 and 35 groups, and then actually be able to break out sessions as well. So so that came along at a good time. Not so mature were tools from the big folks, the Facebooks and Googles of the world, and those platforms are just starting to catch up now. Facebook, I believe, what's the number? I can't remember it. Can have up to 30 people, I believe, 50. Or 50. 50 people, yep, on at a time, which is seems like plenty for a good family reunion or to get friends together or some coworkers. So that'll be integrated in with the Facebook side of the house. Google Hangouts was just being killed off, I think, in recent memory, and has come back to what's the word they're using now? Is it Meet or Meets or something like that?
It's Google Meet. So it's
Google Meet
for Hangouts.
Yep.
But
yep,
that was a paid only. Google is now going to give it away for free until September. Then after that, for normal users, you get 60 minutes free, but after that you have to pay for it. So it, you know, it can be a little bit different. It's more, you know, kind of getting to WebEx and Teams, where while they're all free right now, they will go back to pay models in the future, probably, unlike Facebook.
That's right. I'd forgotten about that. It was a part of their G Suite of products. So if you paid for the business version of Gmail and Docs and all that sort of thing, it was in that realm. But now, because of the pandemic, it's one of many companies that for, you know, the next 30 days, 60 days, are giving you that little taste to try to get you hooked for afterwards to hang on and give them your credit card number.
Right. Heather, can talk
I,
a little.
I think that'll be the... Oh, go ahead.
Nope, you go.
Well, I think one of the keys that'll be interesting is when we do get to September, regardless of what happens to the pandemic, is who will actually retain market share out of all of these places. I mean, Facebook, late to the game, but has that inherent advantage that people go on there naturally every day versus 3 months from now, will I necessarily have a reason to go on Zoom, or will it be part of my workflow? I think Microsoft probably has another big advantage in that so many entities use the rest of Microsoft's suite of products. So I think it's definitely, this will have all changed long-term how companies interact, how individuals interact, and it will be really interesting to see which of these companies, you know, it's easy to get a lot of users. I mean, I can't remember what the number was for Zoom, that they went from like 20 million to 200 million users or something completely insane like that. But how can you retain those people and make it part of an everyday habit when life resembles something closer to normal?
Right. And we're all tired, there's a fatigue here too, don't you think, Heather? That there's not only a fatigue of looking at the screen, but there's a fatigue of learning a new program. And so if somebody told me, you know, we're switching from Teams and we want you to do this new thing, I would just, you know, probably drag my feet a little bit, because it seems like every day we have to learn something new. At some point, people get tired not only of the pace of having to learn new tech, but just of staring into that screen. I can't do any more screen time.
Well, and
some
actually,
of us think that's fun, though, by the way.
I know you do.
But they have done studies that because of the way we interact in a video call, that, you know, when we're at a conference table, I don't see all, you know, 10 people in the room. I don't see all your faces at the same time. And they've done studies how exhausting it is for a human to have 10 faces close up with their eyes right there, because of the natural way that, you know, we're biologically wired to interact. And interacting in a conference call is, if you feel like it's tiring and overwhelming and too much, that's a biological mechanism. Your body's saying, I don't like this. This is, my brain doesn't want to look at this many faces this close for this long. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we get to a point where there's a sharp drop off before we are able to pick it back up again. Because I think that moment when we have a few normal interactions and avoid it for a bit, we probably will as a human species, because we need to We need to feel that normal human interaction to a certain point.
And here's one of the things that I've noticed, Heather, and tell me if you've seen any research on this, but Twyla, who works for South Dakota Public Broadcasting, has stopped by my house twice to drop things off for me, and we've stood at a safe distance and whatnot. But I'm so happy to see her face, and I'm kind of an introvert, so I don't need a ton of human interaction in the first place. I'm pretty fine if you leave me alone for long periods of time. I worked as a freelancer for a decade at home, out of my home office, so I'm good. But when I think about the people that I'm really happy with right now, Twyla is like top of my list. And I think it's not just because she's a nice person. It's because I've seen her face and I've looked at her, and she's one of the few people that I've looked at recently. And I'm just really fascinated by what we know about the brain and how I'm probably always going to, you know, remember Twyla. Shout out to Twyla if she's listening.
We know that when we interact with people we, you know, like and enjoy being around, we get a dopamine rush. We actually get a chemical happy reaction. And I think when we've been so cut off from that physical interaction, the people we actually get to see are like our little high.
Right. I think you're right.
Extra hit. And our brains can't, the brain is such an incredible, flexible thing. Just like you can get rewired for enjoying a slot machine or, you know, the things that give you a dopamine rush, you might have a permanent Twyla high.
Also, she brought me chocolate, so it's followed by that kind of rush. So there's lots of things going on.
Dopamine rush. She's a sneaky one. But I know we have gone out. We've only really interacted with people in our neighborhood that we drop eggs off from our farm with, and those few moments we get to see a smiling face from 10 feet away that's a real face in the real world in real time. I know for our family it's been the same thing. We're like, oh, I usually only saw you at church, but I'm so excited to see you now.
There you are. Jeff, tell me a little bit about ways to, Kent mentioned earlier to me today that, a lot about gaming. And one of the things I was thinking about is how that culture has changed because, more people are interested in I read an article in the New York Times that was talking about date night with someone that you're separated from. And one of the solutions was gaming, like figure out a game to play together. And people were looking around for the first time to say, maybe I could do that. Maybe that sounds fun and I can do it in this new context. Have you seen changes in sort of how people think about interacting with each other during on gaming platforms? And keep in mind, I know nothing about gaming, so you get to answer this question with no help from me, but a curiosity.
Probably not how, but the numbers certainly are up. Every stat just for about every game has gone through the roof with everyone stuck at home. But there's a few category of games where I know people who met and married through the game and also play side by side in two different rooms all day long. And that's how they communicate with themselves. So they've been playing like MMOs. World of Warcraft is kind of famous. And there's tons of stories about people meeting and finding boyfriends, girlfriends, getting married, playing, raiding together. Because that game was built basically on massive amounts of players interacting with each other to be able to even progress in the game. To do certain aspects of the game, you have to get into groups of up to 25 people. So it kind of forces a social interaction. And those types of games and or some of the other kind of co-op games. And what I mean by co-op is there's games you can play by yourself, but there's also games you can play with another person, maybe up to four people. Call of Duty has zombie mode where you can get four people together. I used to do this, have it done for a little while, but every Friday night, Saturday night, we would spend hours just playing together and talking to each other and just discussing everything through voice channels in the game and stuff like that. As we were playing. And a lot of people are using that as their primary way to get back with family and stuff, especially in the MMOs, because it's easy to log in. There's voice chat. If you run like Discord, there's easy video and free voice chats and channels. And Discord is kind of in the gaming community already. Easy to set up your own private servers. invite people to the game, get people talking on Discord, and just have a good time. So, yeah, the numbers have been skyrocketing. Many of the platforms are seeing record numbers of people on the game, especially the ones that have social interaction.
The only gaming that I have done with anybody in my life is through Webkinz and my daughter, because we each have Webkinz accounts from when she was little. I don't know if Webkinz is a thing anymore, but Heather, I'm wondering if you've heard from a lot of these, the class of 2020, who have gone back to things like Webkinz and done really crazy stuff on Club Penguin because they have these accounts from when they were little, and now they're like, well, this is fun. I'm going to go back and try that again. What's cool amongst the youngsters these days, Heather?
Well, I think just like we've seen a lot of nostalgia reading and a lot of nostalgia movie watching, and, you know, you go back to the things that take you to a happier time and they're comforting, we've definitely seen a lot of nostalgia gaming. I mean, one of the things you cannot get that they have signs in front of a Target or a Walmart are the Nintendo Switches, because not only do they have some of the newer games, they are an access point to a lot of older Nintendo games, everything from, you know, people who had them in 1989 to kids who were playing them 10 years ago. But the Nintendo Switch is one of the hottest commodities in the world right now, because it's a comfort game. It's like, it's the mashed potatoes and gravy of gaming.
And right now they have one of the old classics that diehard Nintendo fans go way over on, Animal Crossing just came out. And that's a very social game. I've actually seen people sponsor fishing tournaments in game, because you can invite other people into your game on that one on the Nintendo Switch, so it becomes a very social interaction kind of stuff too. And it's really, really popular.
Well, and one of the other things that I see growing in popularity among multiple generations, you know, I see families getting together online from their 7 and 8 year olds up to grandma, is there's a lot of great multiplayer trivia games out there where you can have a traditional kind of family game night, and it feels like a Zoom conference with Trivial Pursuit, and those have been growing steadily, because it's an entry level for people who maybe aren't gamers, but you want to get together, and like Jeff was talking about, it's that interaction that you have with other people while you're playing the game. We all know, you know, sometimes it gets a little heated during Monopoly, but that's how you bond or break apart as a family, depending on how it goes.
So what are some of those, and where do you find them, Heather?
Well, I mean, there's options that you can access through social media, which is sometimes an easy entry. Always be careful when you're doing that. I mean, there's always that option on Facebook for games, but I always recommend that people really think about what you're doing as far as giving up your privacy info. But the smartest thing to do is go out to, and Jeff, maybe you can jump in there. I think it's what is the platform where you can go and download a lot of different games that has like a login? I'm totally blanking.
The biggest one for that, those kind of games, would be Steam.
Yeah, Steam. That's what I'm thinking of. Okay. I consider that a somewhat safe zone. I feel pretty comfortable interacting with things that come off of Steam. And it's a great entry point. You can look at how it's like the Amazon. You can see how they're ranked. They have really great descriptions. They have reviews where you can get an understanding of what other people are doing and what you might also enjoy. And then if you have a Steam account and you're using it, it does a great job of saying, hey, you might, you know, like I said, it's not like Amazon. You can find things that you would have no idea exist, but it can lead you into some fun adventures that you can hopefully invite some friends and family to.
Yeah, one of the benefits of Steam is it has a friends list. So on those Friday nights, I'd on the computer, corner of my computer screen, I'd suddenly see one of my friends playing this game or that game, and many games let you immediately jump right into their game with them if you want to play with them. So with a couple clicks, if you own the game, you're immediately in the game with them, playing with them, and you see who's all playing what, and you can all coordinate that way.
Interesting. Kent, any ideas of games that people might want to try, good entry levels for non-gamers to say, hey, this is a way to, especially if you can you play with people who are not in your house?
Well, Heather came up with it. Steam is
that's the place.
Is the way. And of course, there's been a few What was Jeff Google just is it Stadia? Is that the platform that they just launched?
Yeah, Stadia, there's a couple of them. It's a not like Steam in the sense that you play, it's a game, kind of a game cloud. What Stadia is allows you to play games in the cloud so that you don't need a super high-end PC to play super high-end games, because all the processing is done in the cloud and it's just sending me like a video back and forth. So there's a couple of offers coming out like that, but that's more for the high-end gamer that wants to play very high-end games but doesn't have a very high-end PC. It's a little bit of a weird option because you have to buy games separate on there. For the trivia kind of stuff, probably not the best solution. Steam would probably be a bet. If there's a lot of free to play games on Steam that you don't have to pay anything for, like the trivia and stuff too. There's Steam. It's just kind of the big one. There's some other ones, but Steam is just by far the biggest.
And they're really great about free weekends. And it's not necessarily Steam, but the game developers themselves will offer sort of trial days or free weekends, or in some cases, extremely discounted games. You know, you can get into some of the, I don't want to say the word less popular, but the lesser known titles for, you know, 80, 90% off of the retail price that people are normally buying that game for. So I see friends of mine saying, oh, you know, I was cruising around and I saw that this game was 80% off, and I, you know, went down the rabbit hole. So Steam is a good platform, and that's steampowered.com. I believe if you don't have a Steam account, that is how you get in, and you can check it out and see what's going on. But that's a good way of, and it's a good way of managing your games. Frankly, if you've got a bunch of really expensive titles and you buy them through Steam, or attach them to your Steam account, you can pick them up and put them down at any given time. If you've got low hard drive space or you know, if you happen to be pretty fickle about your gaming and you want to bounce around, Steam is a great way to sort of, I forgot I purchased that title. Let me go ahead and download it. I want to play it again. Yeah.
Steam is doing a very big sale. It's May the 4th. Force be with you kind of sale. So every Star Wars game ever made is deeply discounted this weekend. Just before the show, I actually just purchased about four Star Wars games off Steam. But it's just amazing kind of platform. There's a couple other ones coming up, like the Epic Game Store, but Steam is by far the best, and they have everything. If you want to simulate driving a semi, they have the truck simulator game. They have soccer games, baseball games, all sports. You could think of it. There is a game on Steam for there, including the trivia and all that kind of multiplayer type games.
Fun. Let's spend our remaining time talking about some possible gifts for Mother's Day. And what are some of those things that you might want to start shopping for now that doesn't have a sign up at Target that says this is not ever available? Maybe mom doesn't want a Nintendo Switch, but maybe she does. I don't know. Kent, start us out. What are some of the things in the tech world to be looking for this Mother's Day as presents?
Well, it again, it's going to be an individual choice kind of thing. But I'm, you know, one of the big things that we always talk about on the show when it comes around time for gifting are headphones and earphones and things of that nature. And there are a lot of them in the market marketplace right now in a number of different price points. If you want to be reasonable, there are several you can look at. There's a product called Earfun Free, and they're not free, but right. That's just the marketing label that we're giving them. And they're rechargeable, Bluetooth, just little sort of things you just pop in your ears, and that you know, Bluetooth to your phone or your laptop or whatever you need to, and connects you with your technology. It's a better way than shouting into a microphone across the room, or speakers that are, you know, blaring and cause feedback on your Zoom meetings or whatever meeting. earphones, headphones. There's big markets in there. Of course, the little portable Bluetooth speakers, if you like sharing your music with other people. Other people don't mind you sharing your music with them. JBL has a Clip 3 out now that is doing really well. Sounds good, and it's reasonably priced compared to a lot of other Bluetooth speakers that some of them don't sound so good, and some of them are very, very expensive. So it hits a sweet spot there. Maybe a good choice for your mother.
Heather, any thoughts about gifts for Mother's Day? What do you think? Where's a good spot to begin for mom?
Well, I think as we just got done discussing that there's new generations reconsidering how they feel about connecting via technology. And if you're in that position and you have that opportunity to invest in getting, you know, some, especially our older relatives or grandmas, and maybe this is the time you get them an iPad or an upgraded iPhone. I mean, the tech support will be a challenge if we're not able to totally connect with people, but if there's an opportunity to get them, you know, maybe even a newer iPad that connects a little better or improve their internet access at home, this is the time to do it. I don't think, especially for our older generation, social distancing is going to go away anytime soon. So if we can make it easier and better for them to connect with their family and friends, this might be the Mother's Day to make the big leap and upgrade mom's tech.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, because as other people go back to, in quotations, normal, we're really asking our vulnerable population to not do that. And the separation and the divide between the people who are kind of living a somewhat more normal life and those who really can't is going to feel increased in the days ahead. So maybe, yeah, it's time to make that investment. Jeff, thoughts about gifts for the tech worthy in the coming days?
Well, the one thing I was kind of going to recommend, unfortunately, is sold out every place. With all the stuff going on, and this kind of a buyer beware, you cannot buy webcams right now. And the ones you do buy, like on Amazon, I'm just going to warn people, they're $150 to $200 over the normal price of the manager's retail price. So I know there's one that's supposed to sell for $70 that's now selling for $278 on Amazon. So and then a lot of them are used at that price too, so be a little bit careful. Tablets and phones are much better. Apple just released their new kind of budget phone that you can now order, the new SE, if you want to do video conferencing stuff right now, because you just cannot buy video conferencing cameras unless you go to the very high end and need a lot of technical expertise to do so. Because I'm trying to upgrade my own, and that's why I ran into this issue where you just cannot buy a webcam. So I'm gonna recommend, yeah, get an internet speed upgrade, get and then either phone or tablet's probably a little bit better because they're easier to handle, especially if you're trying to do FaceTime and stuff like that. Even an Amazon Kindle would work wonders and stuff too. But I'm kind of recommend the same thing because it's all about getting some social interaction going, because human beings need it. And especially for like people in nursing homes and stuff. I know in Pier, there was actually a drive by one of the businesses to buy tablets for people in the nursing home just so that they could talk to their family and relatives, right? This is going to be a big deal, and especially for the older generations, probably all the way through summer, maybe even this fall.
Yeah. What do we know about the tech support?
And hopefully webcams come back in stock sometime.
Yeah, right. And then we only have a couple minutes, so hopefully a shorter answer to a more complicated question. But we were going to upgrade my daughter's phone this summer because she has one that's very, very old. The home button doesn't work. She's got all kinds of, you know, workarounds. It's my old phone. And we haven't done it because normally we would go into the store and they would kind of switch everything over for us. How hard is it going to be to upgrade your tech as it ages and you had a plan? Kent, can you tackle that? Or
it's super easy anymore to upgrade. Yeah, basically the process, it works the same in Android as it does with iOS now. You just back everything up to the cloud, log out, go to the store, log into your new phone, and tell it to sync, and Bob's your uncle. It's a pretty seamless process.
Go ahead, Heather.
I'll second Kent on that. I'd avoided the DIY upgrades, but it's completely changed, and it's not something to be afraid of anymore. It's doable by even those of us who don't do those things.
Pro tip, big caveat here is know your passwords. Your passwords. If you don't have your passwords, this is going to be very painful, because there are you'll need to log into all those apps again. It'll download them for you. It'll present them to you. But in many cases, you'll need to log into those again.
Okay, and, but if you have them saved in your keychain, they're going to show up again with my thumbprint.
Heather should be.
Somebody say
I'm not an iOS person. I'm an Android guy.
I just did an Android and iOS, and yes, outside knowing some passwords and making sure you have your phones to back up before you start the process, it's so quick. I mean, it just prompts you, hey, you have an old phone. Do you wish to basically copy the settings down? You just click yes, and you set the phone down, come back in 10 minutes, and it's set up exactly. I mean, home screens, yep. Layouts, everything the same. The only thing is the passwords for the apps.
Yep. All right. Good to know. That's our Tech Radio Science Friday is coming up next. Heather Benson, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jeff Litterick, thanks as well.
Have a good day, all.
And Kent Osborne, thanks for being here.
It's been fun. Stay safe.